This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, the stunkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
I was just chatting to Bob Beattie on the Twitter at Bob, B-O-B-B-T 2417, that Kent has decided to ban e-scooters following their trial with, was it Birds they were called? Bird e-scooters in Canterbury?
I don't know what the birds were. I saw the e-scooters in Canterbury.
Yeah, I think, no, Bird, they were, I think the company was Bird or something,
something like that.
But, you know, I hated them with a vengeance. I was driving to the Good Shed, as I always do, from Canterbury, and there were these three or four students on e-scooters, like weaving in front of me on the road, no helmet, nothing. And they literally just moved out in front of me. And of course, it would be the driver that would be in trouble. And then in pedestrian areas, whizzing all about.
Well, the problem is, there's no place for them, is there? They're, they're dangerous on a pavement and they're dangerous on a road.
Yeah.
So where do you put them?
And I also had, I was reversing out of my drive and a young girl, teenager, came along with a little four-year-old clinging on the front. And I was coming out, didn't see her. She just appeared from nowhere and I nearly hit her on the pavement.
Yeah.
So it's really, really scary. But so Kent have actually, in their wisdom, banned them for now. We'll see what happens. You said I had a little, was it a tweet from Fruitworks?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have a look. Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read a quick message and we're going to talk to Tracy in a minute.
Yeah.
But there's Kent Virtual Networking led by Peter Searle, who's the host, and it's taking place on Wednesday, the 28th of September, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Meet other businesses, expand your network, and it's all virtual, it's part of Kent FSB Connect. If you want to find out about it, book your free place on it, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. Have you found it?
No, I'm still looking. I thought you were going to just chat a little bit. Now, we've had a tweet from Casey Canine. That's Casey Canine 2014, the award-winning greyhound. He says, "Hi, Jules and your little helper. How about a shout out for a prize winning greyhound still waiting for a date with Darcy?" Because of course they were going to have a meet up, Darcy and Casey.
It's been a long time, hasn't it?
I know, mooning over each other. But we were going to meet up, but it was a very hot day. It was too hot for greyhounds. So, but now Casey Canine is of course award winning. He'll probably have lots of female suitors, I would think.
Do you reckon?
Yeah. I took Darcy to the vets for her injections, and the vet said how magnificent she was now, and she's got lovely muscles. She was very impressed.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all that chasing hares.
Yeah, exactly.
The Construction Expo is taking place on the 22nd of September at the K2 Crawley Event Centre. It's the place to meet loads of construction professionals from across the southeast and the UK. 87% of business directors agree it's easier to communicate face-to-face than by phone, email or Zoom. You can book your free ticket for the event by going to www.constructionexpouk.co.uk. That's constructionexpouk.co.uk.
I still haven't seen any tweets from Fruitworks, so you do know my timeline is being slowed down.
That's
by
bonkers.
Twitter.
You always miss them. I don't know why. It's strange.
No, Twitter are terrible. You know, they are. They slow my thing down all the time. Maidstone proclaims new sovereign in historic ceremony. An historic ceremony has taken place in Maidstone today on the 11th of September. What is the date today? Is it the 11th today?
It's the 13th.
Oh, okay. So this was on the 11th. And it's to proclaim the new King Charles III, with hundreds of local residents coming along to witness the momentous occasion in Jubilee Square. Maidstone, as the county town of Kent, was the first borough to make the announcement in the county, with other boroughs and districts in Kent following shortly afterwards. The announcement was delivered by the High Sheriff of Kent, Russell Race. Is that his name? Russell Race.
I guess so.
What a great name. Russell Race. With many, it sounds like a road, doesn't it? With many dignitaries from across Kent in attendance. Following the proclamation, the flag at Maidstone Town Hall has again been set at half-mast as a respect, mark of respect, and will remain in this position until the day after the funeral, in mourning for the death of Her Majesty the Queen. So there's a book of condolences there as well. It's open at the Town Hall in Jubilee Square and also at the All Saints Church, which is in Mill Street, Maidstone. And Kent County Council have a book available at Sessions House. The books will be available daily, 9 till 6 p.m. until the day after the funeral at 5 p.m. for people to sign and send their messages to the royal family. And once completed, they will be sent to Buckingham Palace. There's also an online book of condolence on the website of the Royal Household, which is www.royal.uk/royal-family. Flowers and tributes to the Majesty, Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II are also being welcomed and can be made locally at Jubilee Square in Maidstone Town Hall. And there's also going to be a church service which will take place in All Saints Church, Mill Street, Maidstone, on Sunday the 18th of September, so that's this Sunday, at 3 p.m, which will be open to anyone who would like to attend. So lovely, yeah. She was a great queen, and I think it would be extremely hard to replace her, Tracy.
Paul. I saw somebody said... in fact, it was Graham Souness, a football manager, said that for someone that did a very high-profile job for 70 years, she never actually made a mistake.
No.
And, you know, she was an icon for all that time. Mm. And he claimed, and I have to say I have a great deal of sympathy, is she perhaps the greatest Briton that's ever lived?
Yeah.
But it means anybody following her has got such a hard act to follow. And in the glare of social media now, you don't stand a hope, do you?
I was thinking that as well the other day about social media. You know, before that, you didn't know everybody's opinion. You had no way of knowing tens of thousands of people's opinions on whatever. And now it's all out there.
And, of course, you get two other issues that boil down with that. People's opinions, especially if they've got are not a particularly open profile, so if you know they don't have their name or anything on it, people's opinions can be quite severe, or more severe than they would be if they were talking to you face to face.
Which is why I'm never keen on following anyone who hasn't got a bio or photo.
And you've also got this syndrome of people have this habit of using evidence that they found that supports what they're saying, but the evidence isn't evidence, it's what somebody else said. Do you know what I mean? So you get these memes that go around that are you can't tell if they're fake or not in the first place. And people just post the same thing over and over again as if it's some kind of factual thing. It's like without getting into the politics of it, people have been very vociferous about oil companies having to pay a windfall tax. I didn't come across a single person that actually knew that they already pay a windfall tax. Oil companies pay 65% tax, and almost nobody knew that, yet they all post time after time after time that, oh, you ought to tax them more, you ought to tax them more. Mm. They already pay it, and they've paid 65% for the last 6 months, and before that they paid 30%, whereas everyone else pays 19%. But people don't know this stuff, and they just, you know, keep posting the same thing over and over again and getting angry about it.
Yeah.
And it isn't even a fact.
Oh, look, Paul Andrews. Mm. I've had a tweet from Fruitworks.
Oh, you found it at last.
Yes. Hi, Jules Serkin, with no mention of you at all.
No.
Could we please have a Bee Bunker shout-out using the Bee Bunker hashtag, of course? We have a four-person office available in central Canterbury at Fruitworks Co. So I go past there quite a lot to see my little Chinese herbalist, Dominic, who's lovely. And I nip past there all the time. It always looks really cosy. I see little people chatting away and working and stuff. Lovely. But so the four-person office is separate, is it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's in the same complex. It's just we've got lots of office units now.
Yeah, and you've got a meeting room, haven't you?
We've got loads of meeting rooms.
We've got a studio.
We've got a huge event space. We've got a 15-person, a 12-person meeting room,
Where do you cram it all in?
Well, we took over all the rest of the complex, didn't we?
Yeah, wow. I will have to go in. Thing is, I'm always in a rush to get to Dominic because I can't be late. And then when I come out, I'm spaced out, so I can't go in and drink coffee. Mm. But I will make it. It looks beautiful outside.
It's lovely.
And
it's,
I noticed they've got some nice goodies to eat and drink as well.
Yes, yeah, the Fong Coffee have continually tinkering with their menu and what they offer.
I love a tinkered menu, yeah. Don't you?
We offer lots of events in the evening as well.
Mm.
Anyway, enough of that. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the show after far too long the lovely Tracy Ferguson. Tracy, welcome back onto the show.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
I haven't seen you for ages. We were just saying that it's since we actually physically saw each other was 3 years ago.
Yeah, I know, far too long.
And
Tracy, well, I put a photo of her up the last time I saw was a Christmas slope off.
Yes. Mm.
I don't know. Was that the last time I saw you?
Yes, probably, yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, again, it seems a lifetime away ago. Before lockdown and everything, Tracy and I were working on a project of careers fairs around, and we had two more planned, didn't we, when it all hit, and we had to abandon it all, and haven't seen her since.
And here she is in
She is in full living Technicolor glory, and it's fabulous to have you back,
and
Tracy.
Look what we've got, Paul Andrews. Our own
Plucky cards.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about this. Tracy is the brains behind Plucky's World, but she does far more than that. We kind of talk about Plucky's World a lot because it's a lovely resource, but she does a lot more than just Plucky's World cards. But let's start off, Tracy, by talking about Plucky's.
Okay.
Yeah. What was the inspiration? Well, tell us what it is and then what the inspiration for it was.
So... Actually, listening to James talk and about how something visual is a really good way of helping people to open up and to see things. So he asks people to make lists. Mm. And I think that once you've got something out of your head and onto paper, or so that you can see something, it then becomes a reality. So when I started working with, particularly with the Prince's Trust and also... Optivo, who are a local housing association, I was working with a lot of people who were very vulnerable, not really knowing what their place was in their world and not being able to express themselves and not being able to talk.
So what kind of vulnerabilities are we talking about there?
Feeling mental well-being problems, definitely. On medication, alcoholism, a lot of people with autism. So I actually went and did a level 2 in understanding autism so that I could make sure that the stuff that I was doing was actually best supporting them. I think a lot of people found it very, very difficult to go inside themselves and to talk about and even, you know, good things, let alone things that are not so good. So I was like looking around at the time and thinking, you know, how can I best support the people that I'm working with to get a really good experience and to be able to, first of all, simply be able to tell me what strengths they've got, because that was one of the things that people found very, very difficult. And I started off looking online, couldn't find anything, so I decided to make my own. So I made cards that I found pictures online, and I actually physically made cards. And then I met the lovely Tammy, and I got this idea for Plucky because I wanted something that it was mainly for young people and children who I was working with at the time. So I wanted something that would be fun, that, you know, there'd be pictures that they could relate to, words that they could relate to. Some of the words that I've got in the cards are things like sporty and musical, because I wanted everybody to have something that they in there that they'd be able to relate to and feel that they were good at. So Tammy illustrated a couple of Pluckies for me, and then Mike and I have since worked on the rest of the design. So now the packs that you've got are the brand spanking new finished designs.
I love them.
So it was originally so that it's a support resource for me to find out through the cards and people sort of choosing a card. So that's one of my ones that I love, fun loving, and you know, people then will attach a memory to that visual representation, and they were talking about all sorts of things. So,
do you get them to choose a card, or yes. do you? Okay,
no. Yeah. I can do that, or I have done that, and that is very, very powerful. So I've gone into Princess Touch, for example, an organisation working with young people, but worked with a team there. So we did a session where people would choose their own strengths and then talk about them. But then I asked everybody to choose a strength for somebody else in the group, okay. and then talk about that, and then so that must give them the card. And that is very, very powerful.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say.
Yeah.
So that must be quite almost humbling if someone's quite unsure of themselves, and then somebody says that they're fun loving or clever or whatever,
and gives an example of how they've seen that. That really does mean a lot. Mm. So I've done that with. Say with organisations and groups where I've gone in and done group work, and also with young people as well. So when I've done workshops, at the end of a workshop, because people get to know each other a little bit better, I'll ask them to choose cards for themselves, but also a card for everybody else who's there. And it is just, you can hear a pin drop when they're talking about and you know, giving people the cards. It's amazing. It sort of brings my like hairs up, like gives me goosebumps, like thinking about it. It you know, is just really empowering.
It's interesting, isn't it, how we don't get enough praise from people about our strengths. You know, it's really easy to criticize people, but to actually find some strengths in people, especially people we don't know very well, is not easy. You may recall, I told you once, there's no reason why I should remember, but 1,000 years ago, I was a Dale Carnegie instructor.
Yes, I remember.
And one of the things that you learn as a Dale Carnegie instructor is that every single person that you start to speak to, you have to tell them two or three things that are positive that you've noticed about and say you identify strengths. When you first start to do that, it's incredibly hard, and it can be a bit fatuous because you go, you're hardworking or whatever. You come out with stock phrases, but after a while you start to learn how to actually look at someone and go, you know what your real strengths are, they are X, Y, and Z, and you can see when you tell a person you don't know very well that, you can see them physically grow in front of you, that somebody has recognized the strength in them,
and the face as well, you know, the smiles, there's somebody on I think it's YouTube, he goes around telling people that you're beautiful and the smiles because, you know, how often do people come up to us and say that?
Yeah.
And I know that with my mum, who's of a certain generation, she's 92 in October, if I praise her, she'll go, oh, no. You know, she won't take praise, that generation. I think
a lot of us are like that, though, aren't they? We tend to be a bit humble about things like that. I'm not.
Well, we were speaking earlier, weren't we, about like James having his epiphany moment when you have to recognise yourself that you want something different for yourself. And exactly what you've just been saying, Paul. So my epiphany moment in that respect, and it instigated my sort of looking deep inside myself and the work that I'm doing now, was me, and I can picture it, I'm sitting in my dining room with Mike, and he said something to me, he's given me a compliment, and I've brushed it off because Queen of Deflection, I was the Queen of Deflection, and he just looked at me and he said, why can't you see what other people see in you? And that started the ball rolling for me. I didn't say anything, but I thought, what effect am I having by that when somebody has taken the time to give me a compliment and I am saying, do you think that's true? Or no, I don't think so. Or I don't agree. So what right do I have to dismiss what that person has said to me? So that every time somebody gives me a compliment now, and I encourage it with people, who I work with and who I come across as well, like the answer is thank you. Simple.
And breathe it in.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's also a thing that it's a bit of a stoical British thing as well, where we don't accept praise too easily. Or we like it, but we dismiss it as, oh, you know, you're too kind, thank you, but don't worry about it. Whereas other cultures will kind of celebrate that, and they will celebrate the good things about themselves.
And don't you think that that is part of, like, a lot of the old work experience as well, is that, you know, come your review, it's okay, what would you like to get better at? Not let's celebrate, you know, what you're great at and build on that.
I've probably told this story a dozen times. When I worked for the bank, I had a boss that didn't get on with, and I went into my appraisal and he said, right, can you list a few things that you're bad at? I went, yeah, sure. Can't speak Russian, can't fly a plane, can't talk Chinese. And he went, no, don't be silly. I went, hold on, mate, you'll need a lot more paper than that, because there's 1,000 things I'm really bad at. And he went, well, no, I just want the main things. So I went, well, you know, what do you think's the main thing that I'm bad at, and why do you want to know what I'm bad at? You know, it's pointless. And, you know, again, a lot of our education system is exactly the same, isn't it? That says, let's fix your weaknesses rather than focus on your strengths.
It's the whole reason why we have teams with people who are good at various things, because there are things that we are never going to excel at. But let's concentrate on the things that we are really great at.
Absolutely.
And build on that.
Yeah. And from my point of view, you know, I used to say a story about this when I kind of worked as a motivational speaker. You know, the way that we attack things like that, in my day, Linford Christie was the fastest sprinter in the UK. If Linford had been at school under normal educational possibilities, what they would have said is, okay, Linford, you're pretty good at the sprint, but you're rubbish at cross country, so we're going to concentrate all your training on cross country, and all you will end up with is a mediocre cross country runner and a mediocre sprinter. You know, why don't we focus on people's strengths? Why don't we focus on what people are good at? Why don't we identify those things? And again, it's coming back to what you were just saying about giving people compliments. We don't try to focus on people's strengths. We always try to focus on their weaknesses so that we can fix them.
And I think, you know, if you're going into a job interview, so it's another thing that I use these cards for. If you're going into a job interview, you don't tell people about what you're not so great at. It's, you know, all the things that you are great at and that you will give to the company and that they will benefit from having you there.
Yeah, because there's
It'd
a
be awful if you went in and said, well, I'm really crap at this, you know.
Yeah. Well, you get these funny stories. What's your greatest weakness? You're an idiot. My greatest weakness is I can't help telling the truth, you know. Or somewhat less horrible than that, you get people who go, what's your greatest weakness? Or, I work too hard. You know, this continual focus on weaknesses and stuff, it just defies me. I just don't understand the point in a bit at all. Okay, so just another thing about cards, because it's fantastic that you developed this resource based on cards.
It's a shame to open the box, really.
I don't know if you know Kevin Cann, who's my business partner with the radio station. He works with Brian Eno, the musician, and they produce a pack of cards. Have you, I don't know if you've come across it. They produce a pack of cards which Brian Eno developed for creative thinking when songwriting.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And they've been selling them for 30 years.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Is that to give lyrics, to help with lyrics?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And tunes. They're just creative cards. They're just a stimuli to get you creatively thinking.
Yeah. Which is exactly, you know, what these are. They are to help people to start a conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's such a powerful thing. Yeah. And without being rude, a simple thing as well.
Yes, very simple. And in fact, I was, they originally were for kids and young people, and I was going to do an adult version.
That was my next question.
Yeah, people have said no, this is, we love this. Yeah.
For adults as well would be perfect, though, isn't it?
So, read some of the cards.
Well, I was just looking. First of all, I just love the visuals. I think they're beautiful. They're so eye-catching. And we've said this before.
Sorry, who did the visuals?
Oh, Tammy did some of the designs. The lovely Tammy.
And then Mike and Tracy.
And then we've carried on with the rest of them.
Right. They sat around the kitchen table.
Hours put into
it. Well, what should I do, Tracy? Should I let Paul choose one, or should I just...
Yep. Let me choose one. That one.
Take it out.
Oh.
show it to Tracy.
Don't what?
Show it to Tracy.
It's
no,
really,
don't you look.
It's really
it
ironic that I can't see the actual car. Oh, I love it.
Show me.
But so you've probably noticed that there's colours around the outside of the cart as well. And this is purely my interpretation, but it's where I think that those particular cards sit within a particular type. So that the red ones for me are performers. Mm. So
That's typical
not,
Paul Andrews.
Yes. Well, actually, I did a session with the lovely Phil Pipdrums a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. It was his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Phil.
Happy birthday. And the
roll out on the drums.
Majority of his cards were performer, which is more like around creative activity. So performers could be people who don't actually like getting up and performing, like me, but have got those creative tendencies. So they might sort of, you know, write films or screenplays or things like that in the background. So it was really, really interesting. And he said that he learned a lot about himself through doing that, because he was literally talking me through all of his decisions. We finally got down to 10, his top 10 strengths, and then his top 3, and then his top 1. So that was really interesting. I was just going to, this is really poignant, and it's my sort of why I love working with these is the last time that we went to Jamaica to see Mike's parents.
I always love your tales of your Jamaican trips.
Just decided to take the cards with me, and not long before we came back, I did a session with his lovely mum, and she had Alzheimer's, and it was absolutely beautiful. She chose almost every card, first of all. And then what I did was, like, looked for, like, the little spark in her eyes. So there were various ones that she, like, meant something to her. So some of the ones that we picked out were, like, musical and a lot of caring. She was a nurse, a district nurse.
Right.
But this musical one, so she used to play the organ for her family. So they had a very large family, very like churchgoers. And, you know, Mike found out stuff that he had never known about his mum, which was really beautiful. And then at the end of the session, he said, "Thank you for giving me my mum back for those couple of hours."
That is really lovely.
It's amazing how something as simple as that can spark a conversation, can start memories, can start you talking positively. And it's all coming back to that positivity switch, isn't it?
Yeah.
That says, you know, how do we switch on these memories? How do we switch on belief in ourselves? How do we switch on looking at somebody else and recognizing their strengths? And something like this is just a catalyst for doing that. It's fantastic.
So do you go into schools?
Haven't yet. So there have been some people working in schools who've used the cards in school. So I've got some lovely feedback from that. But one of the things that I am looking at in the future, and I was speaking to Kevin from the Prince's Trust around this a couple of weeks ago, is with everything that's going on in the world, I'm not going to get into it because I've spoken a little bit about it, but with everything that's going on in the world, it would be really lovely for children and people working with children and young people and lots of other people to have a resource that helps people to feel better about themselves, to have a safe place where they can talk about, you know, things that are going on in their lives. So I'm working out a way at the moment how I can make that happen. So it might be through people sponsoring me to go into schools for a couple of hours with a few packs of cards, do a session with some teachers and team leaders, and then leaving them to carry on and use them themselves.
Idea.
So that is something that, you know, I'm looking at the moment.
Okay.
So it feels like we need to be able to have those positive conversations.
Absolutely. You raised Kevin and the team from Prince's Trust there. I take it you're still doing some work with Prince's Trust.
So I've just done or supported with a couple of online workshops around confidence, so that was that was fantastic. So they're still doing the Get Into programs, which they're sponsored by some Marks and Spencers do one. This one was Get Into Digital, but it was the first time that it's been done online, so people from all over the country can attend or could attend. I supported with a couple of workshops. I haven't done or haven't had a mentee for a little while now because I prefer face-to-face mentoring. So I'm waiting to see, obviously, with all the changes that are going on at the moment, you know, whether King Charles carries on with the Prince's Trust or whether he hands it over to
William. Okay. I mean, it would be a shame if it stopped because it's a fantastic thing, isn't it?
And they, you know, they do a lot for a lot of people around the country. But the other organisation that I'm working with is Optivo as well. So, Optivo.
Right.
So, what do they do?
So, they're a housing association. But they do a lot of resources or have a lot of resources for their residents. So lots of things that they can do online. They do a lot of level two qualifications for people. And people like myself go in and do. So I've done some one-to-one sessions with people and they get a pack of the Pluckies cards to take away with them and workshops as well. So, yeah, that's that. Again, so... You know, I can walk into a room of 15 people who are there, but they're not quite sure what they're going to expect. And it's like, you know, body language and maybe arms folded you know, don't want to, or don't think that they want to talk about anything. And as soon as we, well, I tell them a bit about my story, first of all, because I think that helps people to connect. I never put words up. It's always pictures. It's
the same with James, isn't it? You have a backstory that is inspirational as well. And, you know, that always helps because, you know, people can be cynical about these kind of things and go, I've been ordered down here to do this. I don't really want to do it. You don't understand where I'm coming from. But when they find out you do understand where they're coming from, it kind of opens their thinking up a bit.
And, you know, looks, the way that people look doesn't, we've spoke about this before, haven't we, that it doesn't convey, and with you, Jules, you know, it doesn't convey what's going on for you inside. So you can look like you're perfectly collected and, you know, calm and
to the outside world.
Confident. So I get told, particularly when I was at work, that I was very confident, but actually I was quaking inside. And in my personal life, I was not. I was not confident.
Well, it's like the imposter syndrome, isn't it? You know, I mean, how many famous people, famous, you know, actors, singers, even? I mean, look at Adele cancelling her tours and that, and apparently she's got huge stage fright. I mean, if I could sing like that, I would, you know, I can't imagine having that sort of stage fright, but it happens with everyone, really.
I think a lot of people who are performers as well tend to be introverts, and that is they're assuming a character.
They have a persona that's on the stage.
Look at the comedians, famous comedians. You know, what's his name? The old one, Tony Hancock. A lot of them were manic depressives, weren't they?
And Spike Milligan. Absolutely, you know, and this is one of the strange things about life, isn't it? Is that we all think it's only us.
Yeah,
we go, it's only me that feels like this, but in fact, it's almost everybody.
I do think that
we're not alone. Is my my saying.
Yeah. I do think that the last 2 years must have affected so many people. School age. They must be wondering what on earth is happening, and the elderly as well. You know, as my mum said, during war, we could hug each other. And, you know, this time we've been told not to.
I think that's an interesting point, though, and I think. For you and I's generation, Jules, we've just been incredibly lucky. We fell into a slot in life where things weren't that bad. The generation before, you know, had things like the Second World War and stuff like that. And now the generation after is going through all this nonsense that we're going through.
And paying student loans and, you know, 6.6%,
all that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, a lot of young people will have a go at us as boomers that we had it good, you know, which you can't deny, you know. For the most part, we were quite lucky that nothing major really happened during our formative years in the, you know, on a
in
world
the same,
thing.
Yeah, in the world thing. Yeah. But when you look at it, looking back, we had Vietnam and things was going on. We had stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was always nasty stuff, wasn't there? I mean, winters of discontent.
Well, I was listening to Marvin Gaye. What's the song? What's Going On? Yeah. About Mercury in the Sea and that. And I thought, well, we were talking about it years ago in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, early 80s. Yeah. Well, you've got to be careful because all that scare nonsense has been around since, you know, 2,000 years.
Yeah.
It's how people gain control over other people is by inducing fear, by telling you there's something you can't control that's going to happen to you, and only they know how to control it by either doing it for you or you paying taxes to them or something. You can tell I'm cynical about all of that kind of stuff.
Really cynical?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking at a list of this the other day of things that government have told us are going to kill us within the next few years. I mean, do you remember BSE?
Oh, God,
yeah. You know, they actually had a model that said 500,000 people were going to die of BSE, of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Do you know how many actually died?
How many?
Four.
Yeah, that is awful. But look at the yellow weather warnings.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen? Yeah. I mean, like, I was getting these flashes up, you know, of yellow weather warnings. Mm. I did a little tweet about, you know, is it safe for me to come out from under my bed yet?
Yeah.
And if you saw it, because it was just crazy.
But I think a lot of this leads into the kind of issues we're talking about. If you start to instill fear in your population about all kinds of things, then people will be fearful. You know, and will think that things are outside their control.
Well, there's someone I'll hook you up with after the show, who I won't mention name, but she's training young people at college, and she said that she's shocked by, they're 16, 17 year olds, and she's shocked by, they're all having panic attacks, and they can't do tests because they have panic attacks. And this anxiety that this generation are having, and maybe also it's from social media and certain TV programs. I don't watch soaps anymore, but, you know, whether it's being shown on there. But I know, didn't you see Coronation Street had an athlete drop dead on their show as like normal life? And so this is being fed through all the time.
It's what I was saying, you know, if you're going to induce fear in people, don't be surprised when people are fearful. And this is a large dollop of the problem. You know, we've spent a lot of time telling young people they're going to die horribly. Just think about the messages we've been sending out. You're going to die of climate change. You're going to die of COVID. You're going to die of this. You're going to die of that. I mean, what do you expect people to start thinking, you know?
And also, where is the incentive to go out and get a career if you think you're going to die the next month?
Exactly.
You know, to slog away. And, you know, working is hard. It's hard work when you're young or any age.
I mean, talking more sensibly about the world of work, and I know that Tracy's been heavily involved in this, in helping people think about their careers and things like that. You know, we have the lowest unemployment that we've had in 50 years. It fell again today. We're at 3.6% unemployment.
Yeah, I saw. So what's happening?
Well, there's 20% of the population, though, aren't at work.
Because they don't need to be?
Well, no, because they're claiming universal benefit. Okay. And
Mike and I were talking about this, walking around the shops on Saturday and Sunday. It's like, in virtually every window, the service areas, it was staff wanted.
Oh, yes, everywhere. Yeah.
Everywhere.
Absolutely everywhere, And also, we've lost a lot of our European friends, you know, the Polish people.
But the Europeans have exactly the same problem.
Okay.
I was talking to someone about this the other day, and they were going, well, we can't get hospitality staff because of Brexit.
Yeah.
I said, do you know there's a 237,000 shortage of hospitality staff in France? There's 120,000 shortage of hospitality staff in Germany. There's 100,000 shortage of hospitality staff in Poland. And there's a 340,000 shortage of hospitality staff in Italy.
And drivers was the other
everything.
In Poland I saw.
It's everything.
Yeah.
And it isn't just the UK. It's the whole Western world has a problem where we've done two things. We've paid people not to work, so now they don't want to work. And also, the cost of living goes up so much that the value of work isn't there. It just isn't there. You know, wages do not keep in line with inflation, even though we've had 8% to 14% pay raises over the last 2 years. You're still worse off now than you were 2 years ago because inflation has taken that away.
Yeah.
So people are going, do you know, there's no point in working.
It's like everything, isn't it? You know, James is talking about the motivation, and you were talking about the motivation. There has to be a motivation, isn't there?
Absolutely, and that's what's gone. There's no motivation to work. We've talked about this many, many times. Young people know, it's in the south of England anyway, it's almost impossible to buy a house. Now, when we were younger, one of the first things you did when you went to work is you started saving to buy a house.
Yeah, to buy a house. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, even if it was a real old dog, as I lived in, with slugs up the walls and my first flat.
Oh, we dreamed of slugs up the walls.
Yeah, damp and that. And my first flat in Clapham Junction. But we did them up,
but
didn't
it was yours.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we did it up. And that's what we did.
And but now there's no way that a young person can get on a housing market
unless you've got help. Like we helped out. My three have all got something because we lent them, but they've paid us back. So but, they lent them and they've paid us back.
That's unusual for most people, and they can't get on housing market. So they go, do you know, well, why bother? Why bother? Why don't I just go on holiday to Ibiza and spend the money that I've got?
Or Zanzibar. That's my little dream at the moment, Zanzibar.
You want to go to Zanzibar?
Yeah.
Why do you want to go to Zanzibar?
Because my friend Sally Beck, the journalist, is there, and they've set up a health village. I shall say, bring her on the show one day, by Zoom, obviously. But Zanzibar is, they've created this self-sustained health village, and it's marvellous, apparently. So I'm going to go and check it out.
Blimey.
Maybe for Christmas. Except my family are all going, oh, Christmas, we love Christmas with you. I said to my new husband, what I spend at Christmas, just the turkey, because I'll only have an organic one, of course. Ridiculous cost. So I just go to Zanzibar.
Right.
Check it out.
Yeah.
I had a builder round this week to give us a quote.
Was it Bob?
And I mentioned, Bob the builder, his wife's got an exemption from the AstraZeneca, and I mentioned Zanzibar, and he said he knew all about it. He said, yeah, that's the place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Holistic.
There you go. Anyway.
Not just spices.
I want to come back to Tracy and just finish off talking about some of the work you do with careers and things like that, because it is really, really crucially important, especially with young people, to understand the world of work and why it's useful to be able to work and to build a career. And for me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, you've got your own thoughts about this, I know, but for me, you know, my problem when talking to young people is they don't really understand that it's a journey. A career is a journey. They think it's something you just do, you know, and you go, what do you want to do? I want to be a footballer, I want to be a singer,
or I want to be famous,
or I want to be a YouTuber, even, you know.
Yeah.
And you go, but everything's a journey. You've got to start at the bottom and learn what you do and then grow into it, and you're not stuck in one thing, you know. Just do anything and then move from there.
Yeah, it's all about life experiences, isn't it? So I think, you know, my first job was well, apart from barmaid, which I absolutely loved.
I can imagine there was a queue for you to pull a pint.
Sorry, I missed. What was it?
Barmaid.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I loved that. Can you imagine the queue of men waiting for her to pull a pint?
Yeah.
But, you know,
and most of it went. No, we got the shakes in,
And I had to add up everything. So, you know, you used to add up in your head in those days. Yeah. But yeah, I worked for a theatre, making theatre costumes.
Right.
What else did I do?
Because you're very creative. I've seen some of your work at home.
And the reason I started making clothes, actually, because like you, Jules, like fairly tall, and I couldn't get anything
right
to fit me. Everything was ankle swingers.
I know.
When they weren't in fashion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so...
Before long, tall Sally.
Yeah. And I think, you're right. It is a journey of lots of different experiences and finding out what makes you, what you're passionate about, what makes you happy to get up out of bed in the morning or in the evening whenever you go to work.
So what if you've lost your passion with your cards?
So particularly, well, I like the values ones for those. So I generally start, especially in organisations as well, or if I'm doing one-to-one career sessions with people, is let's look at the values first of all and see whether those actually align with either what you're doing or what you want to do. Because, for example, if you know you want to go into the caring industry but your actual values don't sit well with that, then you might want to think about something else that is going to light that fire for you.
Absolutely. And there's two things there. I'm always fascinated. There's a guy called Richard Nelson Bowles who used to write an annual book called What Colour Is Your Parachute? It is American.
Yeah.
And it was a career changers Bible. Fantastic book.
What Colour Is Your Parachute?
Yeah. And I think it's still available, although he passed away a couple of years ago. But the organisation he created reproduce it every year. And one of the things that I found in there, and it's a massive tome, it's a huge, thick book, but the few pages that really struck home for me was what he called transferable skills. These are different terms for the same thing. But he identified that every human being, there are three sets of skills: skills with people, skills with data, and skills with things. And we all have a particular profile of how we interact with those skills, mm. And what level we interact with them at. When I discovered that, it made so many things clear to me why some people are good at some things and some people are good at others.
Yeah.
You know, it really depends on what their preference was for that. I never worked out how they got that preference in the first place, but when I understood my own preferences, it made an awful lot of sense in terms of the things that I'd enjoyed doing in my yeah. working life and the things I hadn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, from that point of view. But the other thing that, having spent a long time in the world of work, that I discovered is that it's really okay to change your passion. You know, there comes a point where you can get bored with something and you want to do something different.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, people feel stuck by that. You know, they get to the point in their life where I've got a mortgage, I've got kids, I can't change. You can. You actually can. And it's really worth doing it. If you're fed up with where you are, or you're not making any progress, or you're not heading yeah. where you want to head.
Because surely if you're feeling like that, you're not giving 100% exactly. of you to what it is.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm just talking about that. So I know that when I worked in retail, so I worked in retail for 20 years, and I thought I loved my job. But I did feel at times like a square peg in a round hole, and part of that was around my managers would say to me like, Tracy, you've got to come and sit with the senior team, and you've got to, when the store director comes round, come and like walk him round to the department. And I would rather spend the time with the people who work with me, like mm-hmm. who see the customers, because you know I want to have a relationship, or I wanted to have a relationship with them, and so I never felt like I completely fitted in. And now that I've done the work around values, so I know that one of my top values is freedom. So the freedom to be able to choose who I work with, when I work, and you know what I do. So like that Maya Angelou, that's why quote that is why that is so important to me. Yeah. But it took me like 50 odd years. I think I was probably 55 by the time I realised that.
Mm. It's really strange, isn't it? And of course, corporate careers can be quite difficult because they become bogged down in internal politics.
Mm. And there's still the woman thing, isn't there, about how you have to look, you know, you're an attractive person, so it's fine. But imagine if you're not attractive and you're a bit tubby and you've got, I don't know, I'm trying not to, you know, you're expected to look a certain way as a woman at work. Even now, still, this thing about heels and how you have to... When I was on GB News, I wore these platforms, right, because you know I've got a metal knee. And my husband texted me when I was live on air, and he said, they're homing in on your platforms, you know, because all the girls on there have got stilettos and lovely slim ankles and that. I went, no, they're not. Yeah, the camera is homing in on your platforms. But there's this whole thing about how we have to look, isn't there? And also if you're a certain age.
Yeah, you know. I think it was, and I'm, you know, it might be different now, but it was unusual to find like top managers who were women. And, yeah. and you know, that I think that is more usual now. But hopefully it is.
Absolutely. Tracy, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been
an absolute pleasure. If people want to find out about Plucky's World or anything that you do, what's the best way to do that?
So it's, they can find me on Twitter, Tassie64. Website for Plucky is www.pluckysworld.com. And my email is Tracy, T-R-A-C-I, @pluckysworld.com.
Fantastic. The links to that are all on the Business Bunker radio website, and will be there forever if you didn't get a chance to write those down.
Thank you.
So I've just had an idea, because I was thinking of these. So to make the most of them, could you ever do a virtual thing with quite a few people coming on Zoom?
Yes, yeah, I have done. So, yeah, I have
there
done
There you
that.
Are.
Fantastic.
Because otherwise, you know, we'd have to go to Rochester, wouldn't we?
I think part of like my plans for the future as well. So once because I'm in the process of trademarking, is doing some like teaching resources. So having something on the website where people can go to. There's already something on YouTube, but you know, where Like, yeah, people can find out how they can best use them.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's scope to stage an event, you know, a small event to invite people to as well.
Yeah.
You're talking about going to Rochester. I was going to invite Tracy to Canterbury and some of my other places.
I'm going to
be working on something in Sheerness that you're going to be really interested in as well. You know, inviting her to come and do these kind of workshops there, and you know, get people to come in and do it. You know, so that will be cool. Anyway, that's good.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much.
And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You inspire us and lift us and make us start thinking about positive things whenever we meet you. And that's lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. We've got 2 minutes until the end of the show. Have you got anything you need to read out urgently?
I have, but you say something first because I've got to find it. My feed is extremely busy.
Are you a standout small business that has achieved constant growth? There are two business awards still to be awarded this year, which is Maidstone Business Awards and the Tunbridge Wells Business Awards. The entry is free, and the categories include creative, digital, customer service, innovation, startup, small business, businesswoman of the year, family business, and construction business. If you go to businessawardskent.co.uk, you can find out all about it. You've now got 1 minute, Jules.
Well, the travel CEO on the Twitter, CEO_TTUK, says, does anyone still live in a town where going out shopping on a Saturday is a worthwhile experience? I'm in Hastings and our town centre is dead. Debenhams closing was the final straw, and now it's phone shops, vape shops, empty shops and charity shops. And I've sent that through to our friend at retail, Richard Shawnee at retail, thing we've been mentoring. We must all support our local shops.
I still think there's a couple of high streets that are worth a visit. I mean, Canterbury's still hanging in there. Sevenoaks is really nice. Tenston's good.
Whitstable's thriving. Very, very busy.
Anyway.
And Tankerton has got lovely now. Got little eateries.
Apart from that mad woman that runs up and down the beach naked.
Yes, exactly. In the nice weather. And Tenterden Chamber, High Vanilla Web and Jewel Circuit. Please, can you give a shout out to a busy chamber team, growing membership?
Fantastic, thank you. The Tenterden Chamber is a lovely resource. I am a member myself, and it is certainly worth being a member if you're in the general district. It's not just Tenterden, it's the whole villages and surrounding district.
And guess who's listening in?
Go on.
It's Lisa Settle.
Hello, Lisa.
And she's agreeing with us.
Good. Well, that's something.
She says, so agree that there are big boots to fill. I'm not sure the Queen does wear boots.
She does. Riding boots.
I'm sure she wears like sort of gold slippers.
Anyway, we've got to end because we overran last week.
Well, Lisa Settle saying something.
But we overran and we got cut off
big
last
week. Big
boots
to fill when it comes to the monarchy position. Her Royal Highness the Queen will be a hard act to follow. Goodbye.
Anyway, thank you. I want to say a huge thank you to this week's sponsor, DG East, to our guests, James Roffey, and the lovely Tracy Ferguson, to my co-host, Jules Serkin. You've been listening to me, Paul Andrews. We'll be back next week with another Business Bunker show. Have a fantastic week, everybody.
I won't be here. I'll be in Valencia.
You're away, yeah. God save the King.
Arriba, arriba.
Yeah.
Ciao for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.